Hello, I'm Andrew Tuck and you're listening to Tall Stories on Monocle 24, brought to you by the team behind The Urbanist, the show all about the cities we live in. How does an icon of international diplomacy that draws throngs of visitors for its annual assemblies, as well as lots of tourists, affect the day-to-day running of a city? Well, to chart his own journey as a journalist from Model United Nations to reporting on the real thing, and to explain why the organisation's New York City headquarters is so picturesque to some and irksome to others, here's Monocle's news editor, Chris Chermak.
There's something special about being a journalist, and it revolves around a simple but privileged thing, access. Access to people you wouldn't otherwise have an opportunity to talk to. Access to events and travel and locations that you otherwise might not have a chance to ever go to. And yes, access to buildings. Those high-profile, official-looking buildings and spaces that are otherwise off-limits to the average citizen in a city. I've been lucky enough to have privileged access to a number of these special buildings over my career, particularly as a young journalist in Washington, D.C., where I had access to the White House for press briefings, the U.S. Capitol building for congressional hearings, the Supreme Court for high-profile court cases, to name a few. For many of my fellow reporters, it became so routine, just another job, that they seemed unaware of their surroundings. As for me, I always remember making a point of taking stock, taking that occasional moment to admire where I was standing, to turn around and look back at the entrance to the White House or the rotunda of the U.S. Capitol, to remind myself that this wasn't normal and probably wasn't going to last. Nowhere in my career was this dynamic more apparent to me than in New York, home of the United Nations. The UN's headquarters, overlooking the East River in Midtown Manhattan, were completed in 1951, designed by the world-renowned architects Oscar Niemeyer, Le Corbusier, and Wallace Harrison. Tourists from around the world will flock to the UN Secretariat and General Assembly building for tours. But for most New Yorkers, there's little to appreciate. Ask the locals and they'll mostly complain about the traffic. Every year in September, New York's Midtown grinds to a halt amid the traveling phalanx of limousines and armored cars filled with world leaders and their entourages, who travel to the UN for the annual General Assembly summit. The locals probably wish every year was like last year, when the annual assembly was held digitally instead. My own love affair with the United Nations began quite young, as a rather confused global citizen growing up in Brussels to one Austrian and one American parent, I've always fit in best with international communities. Add to that my interest in news and politics, and, well, the rest kind of explains itself. In high school, I became one of those geeky kids who joined model political summits, the model European Council for the European Union, and, yes, the model United Nations. I attended an MUN in Cologne, where I represented the leader of Bolivia, though what I remember most is being jealous that I didn't get my friend's job of representing the island of Tuvalu, which back in the day had one major export, the .tv internet domain name. A couple years later, my geeky fascination became something of a reality, as, through a bit of blind luck, meeting a friend of a friend who was working at the United Nations, I suddenly found myself with an internship at the UN's headquarters. I spent 2 months working for the UN's public relations team, the Department of Public Information. I remember the wonder of being able to walk regularly into the kind of city landmark that tourists were waiting outside to get tours of, and that the locals loved to hate. For me, being in the UN's headquarters always felt like home. The UN was like a city or community unto itself, filled with my kind of people, a confused mix of hundreds of nationalities and ideologies, realists and idealists, and disillusioned idealists. A few years later, as a journalist in Washington, I made a point of taking the annual assignment to help out our New York reporters covering the UN's annual General Assembly meeting. Those New York assignments had long been the highlight of my political career. That was, of course, until this last month.
But it is a pleasure. It's a pleasure, really, to put us some stop in those frantic activities and to have a nice chat with what I consider a distinguished representative of intelligent media.
That's a clip of the UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres, And in the background there is a bit of extremely awkward laughter and attempted small talk from my geeky starstruck self. It's fair to say that doing an interview with someone of the stature of Antonio Guterres, which you can read all about in April's edition of Monocle magazine, would be something of an out-of-body experience for many of us. But, as I'm sure you can imagine by now, it was even more so for me. My only regret is that, given current restrictions, I wasn't able to return to the United Nations headquarters in New York to do the interview with Guterres in person, to relive some of my past glory days, take stock of the recently renovated building as it stands. So, Mr. Guterres, if you're listening to this, I do hope you'll invite me back to do this again someday in New York. I promise to be cool as a cucumber this time, but what I can't promise is that I won't take a moment to stop and admire my surroundings and to make myself feel right at home.
You've been listening to Tall Stories, a Monocle 24 production. Our thanks to Chris Chermak for today's episode. Remember to tune in on Thursday for the full 30-minute edition of The Urbanist. I'm Andrew Tuck. Goodbye, and thank you for listening, city lovers.